Board of Education work session today is Tuesday, October 14th, 2025, and the time is 5:30. Jamie, can we have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Heck.
Here.
Mr. Jenkins.
Here.
Mrs. Myers.
Here.
Mrs. Tarasi.
Here.
Mrs. Vincent.
Here.
Will you please stand for the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hello, everybody.
All right. Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome back. And so our first item is transportation event transportation. And cost. So in your set of documents, you're going to find a simple little one pager right here. And we set out our so you're going to see the different items that our kids will pay. Now, there's probably a little bit of other things that happen, but these are like the biggest items out there. And so we'll talk more about other areas too. The first one, though, so band and orchestra students. So band and orchestra students have a monthly rental cost. The cheapest is $20 a month, all the way up to $79 a month. And I'm not going to try and get into those different statistics, I won't mispronounce them. But that is the cost range. The payback is usually 24 to 36 months, and it's a rent to buy. So every dollar you put in it goes towards that cost. Most of the instruments are a beginner instrument, and what's really cool about the system that they use is that if they move out of a beginner instrument into a non-beginner instrument, is then all that money, 100% goes towards the next instrument. So this travels up. So we have currently 190 students, 5th through 10th grade, that are renting to buy equipment. And so you take, for example, an average, $50 a kid, 190 kids, $100,000. Okay, that's what that comes to. This, when I go through all these, we kind of have a feel for it. Bandcamp. So Bandcamp is something that our kids attend to. This is high school. And we have this last year, 105 students take part in Bandcamp. Bandcamp in the past has been over at Spring Arbor University. I'm not sure if it's going to stay there in the future, but I know that talking with our band director, it's going to go up $50 per student. The band camp, though, is also, some of that cost is offset by the boosters, so not full amount there. Like in all that we do, they, if a student can't figure out how to pay for it, they have mechanisms to assist. The school does cover all travel costs to and from the band camp. Solo ensemble, the $20 fee for students. And a $30 fee for the small ensemble, plus possible cost for accompanist. Now, here's where this one is interesting. It's more, this is a student choice, not a mandate.
I don't know what we're talking about here, sorry. Non-using. $20 solo.
So, it's part
I can share.
Thank you. I wanted to try to have at it.
I actually did this.
There we go.
This one is
a
good hand.
Yeah.
So, for band, choir, and orchestra students in middle school and high school, they can go to an event called Soul and Ensemble. It's hosted by an organization called either MSBOA or MSBNA. It is a statewide thing. You start at a regional space, and then after that, if you get a grade one or, well, grade one, you can go to state after that. A solo is an individual playing, typically with an accompanist, so you would perform all by yourself with an adult playing piano to accompany you. And then ensembles are 2 to typically 8 is the maximum, but sometimes you see small ensembles, like basically like a miniature band performing together. So that's what those costs are. It's done typically during the school day, because in Michigan you often like get on a bus, go to another school that's hosting, and then participate in solo ensemble for the regional aspect, but then state is often over the weekend. So you'll load up on a bus, travel, do your state, and then come home.
So, since
you posted
people winning this.
Yes.
Yep.
It's catching on.
Yep. And so, it's not a mandatory item. It's a choice for kids to do this. So, yeah. But this is paid for by students, by their families. Field trips. So, field trips in our school district is $35 per hour for the bus driver. $4 a mile, that covers the fuel and wear and tear on the bus. And then there's a half an hour charge, for cleaning and fueling the bus. So when that's where that takes the bus out, we have to
move to it. Are we talking about all field trips?
So, for example, there's only one field trip right now that the district covers, which is our fourth graders going to the state capitol. Okay. But if you, let's say you were teaching third grade and you wanted to go to Sauter Village, okay, and it's an 8-hour trip, you know, there and back, you would be paying the teacher through either with the parents or the PTO would pick up the cost of the driver for that 8 hours, the fuel, the $4 per mile to and from, and so it would be an 8.5-hour charge.
So who typically covers that for the school trips?
So a lot of times for school trips, it will be through the PTO. Okay, and or through a teacher or through the classroom, you know, through the parents.
Typically, they don't charge. Well, I guess they do. Now that I think about it, $10.
They'll charge based if there's a registration fee to go there. And sometimes, based on the buildings and the strength of the PTO and what they do, who gets picks it up. I know I asked Terry and to speak more about that and Cassie, but this is where their role that they do all my hair field trips.
Yeah, so the elementary level, like you said, the fourth grade trip to Lansing that is paid for by the district. If the class wants to go or a grade level wants to go to the Toledo Zoo or to Cosi or to some place like that, depending on the funds that PTO has available to them, the PTO may be able to pay for the trip. Sometimes teachers ask students to pay for their entry fee into a trip, and the PTO might just cover the transportation. At no time is any student, though, ever left to not go because of a financial reason. The PTO or the school will use some type of funds to make sure that no student is unable to go.
But the school itself, in their budget, does not have a budgetary line item for field trips.
Correct, with the exception of that fourth grade Lansing trip.
Okay.
And
it seems like they would.
Right. The only other things that we sometimes cover is if a building writes into a grant, those transportation, which sometimes if there's enough of a Title I allocation, a lot of the elementary buildings will write that in, but it just depends. And then we would pay that, but then we get that grant funds back for that.
You would just think that that's part of curriculum, that's part of what would be allocated into an individual school to use that money.
So what happened over time?
Sorry.
Yeah.
The district made a stand a few years ago that the fourth grade trip was the only one that was directly related to the curricula being taught at that grade level. That was pre-me.
Who's down?
It was probably me. I was buying some tack and I said, no, I'm throwing them.
Was it the board or the administration?
Oh, no,
that
was the board.
She said administration, you said board.
But it would have been the administration through the board because they're going to feel the pain. It all goes back to the amount of the finances of a school district. And so for a long time, go back to when Proposal A came about, through the 90s and early 2000s, monies were not bad. And so it wasn't uncommon for, you know, you put in for a field trip and you would go. Now, if you had a registration fee, you'd have to cover that. But I never, when I was a teacher or principal, I never had to worry about it because it's just part of the cost of doing business for our buses. But as monies became tight, and this was in that 2008 time period, like, now you're going, okay, how do we start to control costs? And so through this, pay to participate came in, and that's how you started to control those costs because there was that expense there. And so for me to be able to give you, for example, the number of field trips we take, I mean, that would take Cassie crunching that down. But that's just, again, that's another item that goes against the budget that sits out there.
So I think of it this way. Mm-hmm. If it was a board action that led to that, a board action can easily undo that if there are some budgetary items and ways that that can happen. That's why I asked that question. So it sounds like if it was a board action, it would be a board action again. But the funds would need to be somewhere.
Yeah.
Right.
And since we know we have a general fund that's basically unrestricted.
Well,
that's
he said that.
And I corrected him last night that it is not all unrestricted.
Yes, appreciate that.
So typically, the PTO, how many trips would they be funding like a year?
It varies building by building.
So it's each individual building's PTO.
So
correct.
It used to be a standard. Back when I think PTOs were flourishing with money due to lots of fundraising activities that they were doing, it was pretty much the status quo that in your building, your PTO would pay for one field trip for you. So I remember when I was at Custer, when I taught first grade, all first grade classes went to the zoo and the PTO paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
All of second grade classes went to Cosi. And the PTO paid for it. It was similar that I raised in Bill as a principal. I was able to work with PTOs who did have funds to be able to do that. But I think, over the last seven-ish years, I think kids are involved in a lot more things that put a lot more fundraising things in their hands for cheerleading and their baseball and all kinds of things.
Lots of competition.
Yeah. And then with COVID, our PTOs did, lose out on a lot of opportunity to do things for kids. So I do think that the PTOs are not as able to provide that same level of leadership opportunity.
Don't they receive some kind of state funding?
It's a BTO,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's all fundraisers?
It's all fundraised dollars.
Mm-hmm. I thought that changed when it changed from associations to our
fundraisers and parent volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we just passed a resolution.
So something, and then school supplies, that's another one that we cover all the basic school supplies, so box 16 colorful crayons and...
You want 128 crayons? You're on your own.
Yep.
So you can open it back for 154 crayons.
Wasn't it in the contract that each teacher gets 450
or $500? There's not a contractual amount of what we give, but we do
what
have there's an allocation each building provides for a teacher.
I don't recall a 450
I always wanted to
figure
out how much.
There was a 250 and 250 packing enough.
It was at the top of the page because I was like,
we went through a lot of pages last time.
Yeah.
I know. I'm just visualizing where it was, and I was like, oh, I didn't realize that I did get. No, it wasn't in there.
School supplies.
Being that we just wrapped up negotiations, I'm certain that would have recalled that in the contract. Yeah, the only thing that's in the contract would be overload dollars if their classroom is overloaded with IEP students and student count numbers. But that goes into a mainstreaming account for them to use for additional things. But that's...
Teachers, I don't know if they still do. I know when Donna taught, the IRS gave them, I think it was a $200 standard deduction for... purchasing supplies.
Yeah, I know it's 500 in the great state of Ohio right now. I don't know your permission.
What are you going to do with that?
Nothing now.
I don't know if it's still 200.
How do you report your taxes?
My shoes. Should have taxed it up.
No, but we do. Work with teachers to make sure they have everyone's materials and everyone's supplies. So one of the things I want you to ponder here as we take a look at this, what it paid to participate, that is roughly $100,000, okay? And so that's where the conversation was added, like, okay, well, if we did this here, what would be an equitable thought pattern? And so, not that, every 100,000 gets pulled from somewhere, it goes against the budget. So it's a factor. It's just, you guys are all, I know, very much aware of that. When talking to the band directors, okay, just food for thought, one is when it comes to the instruments, that's a rent-to-buy program. So at the end of the day, the student will own the instrument. You really should not use general fund dollars to do that because you're buying instruments for kids. Okay, so that one really comes off of the table. Yes, ma'am.
I remember in the middle school when they came up and what's his name, the band guy,
Brett.
And we had toured there. Yep. And he said he needed those instruments, and then there was money allocated towards instruments.
We're heading right in 2 seconds.
Okay.
Yep.
I just wrote it down.
Yep, we're heading right to that space right there.
Well, if we are going to do this, wouldn't we own the instruments?
Well, that's what we're going to get to here in a second.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right. Hold off.
Yeah, well, everybody hold off. Here's the thought pattern. The students, I mean, I guess you're one. You probably still have your instrument.
My
point of that is that our kids will mature into their instruments. So what the real need is in the band orchestra department is just more district purchased instruments. Okay, so for example, they want to get a new drum line. Okay, and so they're saving their money right now for new drum lines. And so we put my really first year, I think it was $50,000 on top of the regular budget for next year, allocation for new instruments. And so that's been tapering down a little bit. It's like at $30,000 right now. So they've been saving there for the drum line. So then they'll go to that next item. The idea here would be is that if we increase the amount of money that went into their budget for the purchasing of instruments, those ones, the district owns, and that's ones that kids use. There's some kids that would never buy, they can't buy, so they would have those instruments on hand for them. Okay. And that's what they felt like would be the wisest choice there. But that way, we own the instruments, we control the repairs, and all that kind of stuff. So that's where that would sit. The big question for you would be, and this is why I was trying to think about all the different things is. Once we start down this road, who's the next entity or next person or thing into the room going, okay, you took care of that, well, what about this? Or what about, and so that's why I want to be very cautious as we think it out there. That's my 2 cents on that.
So, on the instruments when we were middle school, what was the quantity of instruments that were purchased? What impact did that have on the program?
Well, those were replacing broken instruments.
Yeah.
I'm just asking. So.
So for a band or an orchestra program, you have to have instruments in the classroom for the students that can't transport those instruments to school. So like a marimba, a tuba, all that, you can't get it onto a bus. So those were the instruments that we were purchasing at that time, was replacement tubas and like Barry saxophones that you can't get onto a bus. Those would have to stay at school anyway. This purchase also includes small instruments that can get onto buses, but we would own those instruments so students can use them. So we would be buying trumpets, we would be buying flutes, we would be buying violins, we would be buying small instruments that students could normally transport, but we would be able to loan out those instruments at no cost to students. That's the difference of like what we previously purchased to what would be purchased in the future.
Do we know how many instruments were purchased, the cost of those instruments? I bet you do.
Over what period of time?
I just
wanted to add on to what Mary was saying in that Brett and Grant, who are present teachers, band teachers, and Justin Key before that, they were always very clever with spending money. So they had resources where they could purchase used instruments at a huge discount that had barely been used. So when we allocate those funds to them, they are very, very wise with how they choose to spend it and really do make a lot of effort to get the most money.
I wouldn't. I had good reason to discount.
I would assume that also some people are going to want to purchase their own instrument anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Because they want a specific instrument. I'm talking about people who may be at a little higher level.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to take some of that off there. It's not like you're doing it for everybody.
But if we buy all these instruments initially, won't there be a little bit of diminishing returns each year since we've already got X amount of instruments? Each year would be a little less to buy?
That's why I asked that question. What did we purchase? What was the cost of that purchase? And what was the impact of that purchase? So therefore, we can use that as a baseline. The only baseline I had to use.
So start with that 23, I think it was, when you and
I can look back when we started the allocation. I can put that in board briefs.
Yeah.
I can't.
You're right. It was probably 20.
I think it was.
But 22. My recommendation, if we're going to increase the amount, it would make more sense rather than doing a bulk purchase that then in 5, 10, 15 years, you're going to have the same large amount of instruments that are aging. It would make more sense to spread an additional amount over a number of years.
Dump money into their budget and allocate it, use it. Is that what we're discussing?
Dumping money?
No.
That
idea is... The set we were talking about.
What I'm saying is, like, we're giving them, I'm going to throw out $15,000 this year, so let's bump that up to $20,000, and then for the next, like, whatever the number is that you would like to increase it by, but spread it over 4 or 5 years to get them on a cycle of instruments.
Is there any discussion, my two brothers played trumpet, so the older brother handed down the trumpet to the younger brother. But none of them did anything after they got out of high school. Do any of the parents then that were buying donate the instruments back to the school?
My daughter's using my husband's clarinet that he used in high school.
We used my sister's.
The other thing I remember is like the bigger instruments, which I think the school primarily owns, and the students would just buy the mouthpiece.
They would have to buy their reeds and the mouthpieces.
So, like I said, I remember distinctly Summer, I'm pretty confident, was...
I remember talking about it over at the Kinney Bush Center, so...
May or so of 23, well, you and Brett and Joey...
When did we do
down.
The tour over at the Middle School? That's when that all started.
Well, we'd already sat down with those guys prior, and that year, I think we allocated $50,000 on top of their regular budget for instruments. And so, and then we talked over... I think it was a 5-year plan that we had.
We started at a higher amount and we've been tapering down.
And then
flat amount.
And get to like
who's that for? Which program?
Best
are
band.
They all combined?
No.
Middle school band and high school band.
Yeah.
So you're talking about both?
Both.
Okay.
And orchestra. I don't want to discount orchestra. That's those. They are
that
included
all
in
the same. Because they all use instruments.
That's the term.
What is it?
Instrumental music compared to choir. So... And in that purchase is also the cases for those instruments.
Yeah.
So, like, the instrument cases for a tuba are shockingly expensive. But to house an instrument that costs originally $12,000, you need to put it into... Oh, a tuba?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's a mint-condition brand-new tuba straight off the line of Con, right?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't buy those. We bought used. But a case...
Yeah.
For that tuba is just as important.
Cellos
are less expensive.
This is not apples to apples.
Brett was really good to me today and that made me feel bad because I had no clue about the cost of these things.
I obviously.
But then I'm looking and going, okay, 36 months, $80 a month, and I can do that pretty quickly on what that instrument costs there. The other thing that we do at a board. Not that this will shift conversations, please don't think it differently, is we are 2 years away from probably around $100,000 investment in band uniforms. So that is coming, and it will come.
Are they on the cycle?
Yeah, they are. And if you actually went out and look at, I got pinned against the bleachers when they after last performance, I got an up close and personal view of what the uniforms look like. And I did. I turned away and all of a sudden I turned back and they're marching at me and I'm like, oh crap, I'm stuck. and it's unpending. But it's that time has come up. I think it's about it's every 10 years roughly.
Okay.
Yeah, so that is. So those I don't know how often they do that.
Right?
Yeah.
Also, helmets and reconditional helmets.
The helmets are different because
yeah.
of the
concussion. Yeah.
Are there laws about replacing helmets? Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
there's a concussion.
You have to get them reconditioned.
They fell into the category of the car seats.
Yeah, and so when it comes to the athletic program, Chet does have them on a rotation, and varsity stuff is handed down to the JV down the freshman. So there is how the other uniforms go. And then last time, though, if there's something special, like a pink owl or some of that sort, that's on the boosters. That's where the booster stuff and anything that's extremely unique to do.
Well, you know, like Harry, if this is not here tonight, probably would have had insight on the last time that the swim team had those, what do you call those things they wear?
Parkas?
Yeah.
The warm-up? Mm-hmm.
I think that there was a long-term need on those as well. So.
So the band went, now in the uniforms, what happened was last time, I got the history on that one today, it was like a 50-50 deal for the boosters and the school. We'll have to talk about what that begins to look like, because I do believe that at the end of the day, there are certain things that we need to cover ourselves at the school, okay? And the boosters are there to lift things up higher. Yep.
Yeah, but we could lay this out, I think, pretty easily.
Yes.
I mean, if our admin take, they need $100,000 now, we buy 10 tubas. I mean, I'm just speculating. Next year, we buy a whole band set, or a drum set. And we know the third year's hard in uniform. So third year we don't buy instruments, we buy uniforms. Fourth year we go back to it.
I think we're also looking at taking that $100,000 and distributing over the next 2 years. And I thought that's what Carrie Cassie and that we just said, take that money and distribute it over the 2 years.
That would be my recommendation.
Yeah. So it's not hundreds of $1,000 a year. Because that would be like $500,000 in 5 years.
Right.
So I think we need to think about, because she just mentioned tubas $12,000. So to go out and buy so many of them, you know what I'm saying?
I do.
I say let them.
Yeah. Well, we definitely let them figure out what they need.
Yes.
So the math problem is this, though, just for conversation's sake. If the Board of Education did anything this current year, for example, $100,000, it's really a $200,000 investment. You took $100,000 away of revenue and added on a $200,000 purchase, okay? So you go, if you think back to what you're kind of talking about moving forward, each year that $100,000 in revenue is not there for you to participate.
I do want to push back on the revenue. Because there's a lot of revenue generation going on in athletics right now. So even though that you may have lost a little bit of revenue on that, there's been a lot of revenue generation.
So
I don't think that there's a loss there.
But the one argument, and I'm not going to let Cassie make this one, because every finance director loves making this one on athletics. Athletics loses money every year. So if, even though they might generate some revenue, they lose money in the tune of $1.3 million.
And to be fair, a lot of the donations that Dr. Chesson is seeking and receiving are designated for a specific purpose. We just got a donation for the windscreen for the new tennis court. We can't use that money for anything.
Oh, no, I understand.
So it's not, whereas the pay-to-participate fee revenue was unrestricted funds to support the athletic programs, where this is designated.
That's all I was just trying to point out, is that it's when we go and add on, that it's really more, it's a $200,000 cost. Yeah, that's all, but it's perspective.
Should we be thinking along the lines, because of what you just said, and start this with the 26-27 school year?
I'm saying that you need to get the information from Cassie on how much you already currently invest,
right,
and then decide, do we put it all to instrumental music?
Thank you.
Or do we do something between instrumental music and field trips? Because those are the, you know, when we look at there, how do you want to distribute that equitably?
So could we, Cassie, thinking of a thought, do this year it was this program was awarded that money for that, and the next year another Avenue gets money awarded. So each year there's a program benefit from.
My question would be what money and to who? Because just saying X
money. I don't know where you get the money from.
Well, that's my question to the board, is what money are you going to designate?
I guess we'll go through purchase services and figure it out. I don't know how else to answer that.
What you might do is earmark.
I don't know your inside.
You earmark $100,000. You would say through a motion that we're going to assign $100,000 to the instrumental music program for instruments in the 25-26 school year. Then we get to the 26-27 school year. You go, okay, this year we are going to assign $100,000 to X. Okay, and that's what. And that's just what you do.
It's basically
you
do it on Board of Education application for those services.
Yes.
So can I just fling something out?
Yes.
For consideration. So yes, we have the information about our secondary instrumental music. I do want to share that our elementary music teachers also have instruments in their classrooms that also need upkeep.
Yeah.
Right, so like all of our ORF instruments, those beautiful xylophone instruments that you see, many of those need repair and replacement. And then also, elementary music hasn't had a curriculum purchase in over 25 years.
A what?
A curriculum purchase in 25 years. So like our elementary music program, we've been operating without any sort of like stuff. We've been basically writing it ourselves. For the last forever.
So there's like an intro reading, but for music.
Yeah. So there's lots of different companies that, just like math curricula, ELA curricula, there's that for music as well. And it you can find it based off a variety of different pedagogies, right? So if you want to do like, we want to focus on students listening to music to learn how to do music. Great. If you want to focus on, we want to learn how to read music to play music, great. Pick your pedagogy, find the curriculum. But there hasn't been one, like the curriculum that I had when I was teaching here was the same one I had when I was in elementary school. And I'm old.
So I have a question.
Any idea how much?
Can I ask why?
Is that cost similar to reading or?
That, I have no idea. Because we've never, like, been in a spot to, like,
Terry,
why
would that be?
We have supplemented with various resources with the music curriculum. I would have to look back, Mary. I don't remember. I know we did work, a long time ago with, like, having these units. And, like, Steady Beat was a unit. And with the listening piece that you mentioned, I didn't know the resources were that old. So I can look at it.
So what we can come back with, I appreciate this conversation, is what I want to quick. So conversation with elementary music teachers, needs for instruments there, and then look at the needs from the instrument side of it.
So, Kathy, I don't mean to be flippant about where money comes from. I just don't know the budgetary constraints and non-constraints in the current budget. So I just have to look and rely on you on that because I have no clue. And that's just true. I would like that idea, but I just don't.
Would it be beneficial for the elementary program, obviously, Sir Mary, and middle school and high school, say, for them to get together and say, this is what we want. Come to us and say, guys, can you provide this for us? We need this, this, and this. And then we get with Cassie and say, what can we afford? You know, am I wrong in my thinking here?
No, I think so.
Rely on their expertise.
Exactly.
Because I never knew a tuba cost $12,000. I didn't know.
I didn't know the hasn't been updated in 25 years.
I know what a drum set cost. I had a daughter in the basement playing one.
Yeah, so we can pull that. We'll pull that group together.
I like the idea of each year.
Yeah, I caught that, and I appreciate that because I think that would help people see, okay, what's next.
Okay.
And their needs every year, I would think their needs would change every year.
Yep.
Maybe they don't. You know, they need new puppets or something.
Yeah. Which one?
Swimming.
Swimming?
Yeah.
Well, we don't know swimming's that right. Swimming, unfortunately, not $100,000 fix.
Right. I just meant for those items that Carrie had brought up.
Oh, yes.
You know, in leading the rest of it all.
Yep. Okay. No, and that's why, you know, it's a delicate walk, and we just make sure we're very transparent in what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, but I think putting that plan in place will help.
Yep.
Are we all in agreement this is something we would like to proceed with?
Yes.
Let's see what the numbers are.
Exactly.
What the plan looks like.
We'll proceed with the information.
Yep.
Yeah.
We'll bring in the information.
You know, my
and we'll bring the character in. We'll bring the issue.
Okay. I don't care what a kid does, as long as they're doing something.
Yep.
You know, sports, theater, band. It tells you band. And if we can support us and get more kids out, I mean, God, we'll
keep them in school and be
exactly. You know.
Wonderful. So more to come on.
Why are you laughing at me?
Expression. When you say Holly Moses, I just find it endearing. That's all.
I know.
I bet you do.
I can't believe you can say that word so good.
Pedagogy. Oh, it's well.
That's the music.
When you go to school for it, you gotta say it a whole lot.
So last night I sent with you the strategic plan. Dave, I'm gonna have you make sure really good notes for us, please. Okay.
Yes. You want me to put it up there?
If you could, I'm not sure, but I'm also on it, but have at it.
Okay.
Okay. So what we did, we took the notes from what you guys talked about in our prior meetings, tried to really clean up the first three priority areas, and then based off those conversations too, we had a pretty good idea that we need to take a look at priority four, and so we even made a priority four before we even came back in, just to try and expedite the work, okay? So I think you'll see that those changes had happened right there. So on page one, we've already talked about this one right here. Again, it's SAT math, right on down through. So those academic goals would not be changing.
We don't have the word each in there. So the way it reads is math and ELA is a combined total of 3 to 5%. So we went from 5%, we dropped it to 3%. And now we're doing a 3 to 5%, which I still don't agree.
So, when it says
grade
11 SAT math and ELA proficiency will increase by 3%. When we go to show the score, it's still subject matter based.
Okay, just because the way you read it, it looks like those two because it's an and, so those two are combined, and that's what.
Right. When we present the material, there's no combining. There's two.
Yeah,
two totally different subjects.
Again, it's just clarification point H. You don't have to agree with
it.
And I still disagree with the 3 to 5%.
Okay. The next area, 1B, increase the number of students demonstrating growth towards grade level proficiency in ELA math. The percentage of students performing one or more grade levels below expectations on K-8 iReady reading and math will decrease by 5 percentage points annually. So we're going to reduce the red annually. Next one, increase teacher ability and deliver high-quality instruction. Create a K-12 comprehensive professional development plan each August for ELA and math, align to findings from a future needs assessment. And then the next one was 100% of all of K-12 classroom teachers will receive at least one session per month of professional development focused on small group instruction, intervention, and or their assigned subject matter and standards to improve teacher knowledge, skills, and practices.
In my notes, I had written down that instead of the September 30th, it's going to be August 1st. But we chose to take the date out.
On the first one, right? 1CI?
Yeah, because we originally said that. We said let's switch it to August 1st. So.
Which we put August 1st in there. Because
I'm just asking why it...
We just said August, so we put the first in there.
Yeah.
Yep. I had a cross-off of July, cross-off of May, and cross-off... So, Yeah.
I thought we left a little vague because of teachers, whether they're on vacation, they have summer plans.
So this is
a little bit of flexibility.
Yep. So what this is the development of the plan. So this is all the information from the year prior. By August 1st, the plan will have been created.
Because you then need to move forward.
Correct. Yep. So we do have some highlights in here. On the 1B section, each year, 100% of all high school seniors will have completed a post-secondary transition plan so that every senior has completed that plan so they have an idea of where they're going. So then that allows us to then, from that plan, survey them after they're out for 1 year to know what they are truly doing. And then also just some information that helps us know. And I'll give you an example. After I graduated from high school, one of my she went to Central Michigan. I was at Adrian. We would talk, and we just made the comment that we wish our English department would prepare us a little bit more for college at that time. Our math department rocked it out. English department needed to give us some more, and we were blown away at what a blue book exam was. Had no clue with that, and or you know, what was needed. So that idea of going back to our students a year after that to find out what are they doing, and then. So
when does the EDP, when did they develop that? I know we had some conversation on that developing through your years.
So, Terry, I'm going to ask for your help right here because I know I did this one wrong. It kind of goes that next one, that for 7th and 12th grade, the EDPs are created. Okay.
So they're created by 7th grade?
They start creating. Yes. We have conversations about careers from kindergarten forward, but we don't get into any kind of an educational development plan until 7th grade.
They're going to initiate it and review it.
And then they review it each year, do the changes.
So initiation would be a completion of it?
Mm-hmm. Starting of it.
Starting of it. And it's a active plan, but I wasn't a fan, remember?
But it's an active participation for the kids. Parents can log in with them so they can create that plan. And then and then we worded it specifically here. 100% of 7th to 12th students will have initiated or reviewed. The reason I put it initiated or reviewed is I might come into Monroe Public Schools as a freshman, and I have not initiated a plan yet. So I've got to initiate it, and then each year, if I've already been a part of the role, I'm reviewing it. Okay? Culture and climate.
So it starts at 7th grade.
Starts at 7th grade, yeah. Yep. Culture and climate. There's really one goal or focus area here, and it's MPS will reduce its suspension rate by 5% annually, reduce its expulsion rate by 5% annually, and reduce its total number of referrals by 5% annually.
Where does the 5% come from?
Got it knocked over here for you.
Well, everything was 5%.
There's a lot of 5%.
Until I got you. Yeah, because that was the baseline that we were using for 5% for everything.
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, then the ladies will hold on.
Up on the board.
We don't know what the baseline is.
Right. So it's up on the board. And it's going in your hands right now. There's those. There's that. David and I put a bunch of work in here trying to get done. So referrals on the 24-25 school year, we have 11,411 referrals. We had suspensions, 1,565 suspensions. Number of instances in which a student received a suspension. So that's not days, it's suspension instances, okay? Expulsions, number of expulsions in which a student was expelled by the Board of Education, we had 19. Chronically absent, percentage of students that were absent, 10% or more of the enrolled days. So this one is...
What was the question?
We'll get back to chronically absent in a minute. Okay, because that's going to be another goal. Okay, but the first three refer to...
Behaviors.
Okay. And so... We just put a percentage in it right now. If we want to address the percentage, we can adjust the percentage. We put something in there as just a starting block rather than just leaving it blank.
5% of 11,411 is a big number.
Yeah, but that's a big number.
That is a big number. I'm saying 5% is cool.
Yeah.
If you're talking about reducing by 6 or...
So, 50. Andy, can I show the...
Yep.
So the... this,
so here's what... Yep.
So this captures a month, the first month of our data, with these first three metrics, referrals, suspensions, and expulsions. And you can, you know, you can multiply by nine and you can see it's kind of ballparky, but we know that there's some growing pains in that first month of September. We also know that some months are far shorter than others. This data gives our administrators, like, this is where we were. You know, you can divide by the number of school days if you want, and that's what they do when they really drill down. But they can focus on, you know, what is the problem, where are the hot spots, what supports do students need, and really focus in and hone in on these, you know, these goals and these metrics.
So on those referrals, two things had struck out when we had this conversation before. And the first one was the Wi-Fi's in kindergartners or kindergartners' first grade. They had a massive amount. They were in the thousands themselves. I don't remember the number exactly. And then the other one would be, what was the impact of the enforcement of the cell phone policy? So if those two are in there, I think they could easily skew for the rest of the system. So was there a prevalence in either one of those in those numbers, do we know?
In
the number that was presented. In the 1,365, was there a high amount of the younger, which is what we saw in the previous data, and then were there increases because of the cell phone?
I can find that out for
you.
You. I do, but I think that, that everything is going to change. Like when we solve our, I don't know, I was going to be a little smart and a little sassy, and I'm not going to. Like when we solve all of our when we solve our, you know, our expulsion problems, or, you know, like if all of a sudden we come up with something that fits, or like there's all different types of factors that will influence this. A building could just say, we're not going to do referrals. Like, but that's not going to happen. Like, there's so many things that go into this that.
If you're comfortable with that number, we accept that number as a straight up number and still stick at the 5%, then I'm comfortable with it.
So if we think about this,
multiply that times.
Really, it's nine buildings that we're looking at?
Eight.
You got Orchard.
Is Orchard ever included in our stuff?
Yes.
Always.
Always. Mm-hmm. Always. So you have five D4s,
nine
buildings. So we took that and divided, which still it doesn't work that easily.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, you think about, okay, you got your K4s as one grouping, then you got your
But it does work because we are talking about the metrics for each and every building, each and every grade, each and every classroom. Like that is what we do as a district and as a building and as on those administrative teams. So if everyone makes it a goal of 5%, like then we, you know, it's consistent everywhere.
So my questions were more about grace in that category more than anything else. So if you are satisfied, then therefore I have no reason not to be.
I remember what Darla was talking about with the young fives and the kindergartners, because it shocked
thousands.
Me. It was like, I mean, it seemed to decrease every year as far as referrals, but that first year or two in school, it was really high. That's what you guys explained to me. They didn't know how to stand in a line, and it was things that aren't really bad.
No,
but that's where a lot of the referrals came from.
But that's how you collect. You're right, and that's how you collect the data. You analyze what behaviors are we seeing, what plans can we put in place.
So you said they're okay with it.
Yeah, so much. Again, so what we would love to see, yes, and the reason why we want to see referrals decrease, because if referrals decrease, that means less kids are being sent out of the classroom to the office, which is a tier one thing. So when you brought up the idea around referrals in our last meeting, that was yes, because if we can see the referral number being addressed in the classroom.
The only other number I had after when I was looking at reviewing this was based on our recent discipline hearings, the board determines expulsion. So whether the administration make a recommendation or not, that was within the board's hands. So the board's data is going to impact the overall school system.
Our ability to institute the 7 statutory factors, whether or not we bring a student to you or not, also influences that. So there's so many things.
Okay.
Like, we cannot bring you anybody in our expulsion numbers.
As long as we're mindful of that.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure we were mindful of that so that we understand that there is something for which, yes, you can control
it. Yeah, we as a board are going to have ownership of this.
Mm-hmm.
Ownership.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, we have.
Yeah. And we really like to see our kids not get expelled, which means
right.
create the behaviors that get you expelled.
Rather than not seeing them come before us.
But I appreciate that wholeheartedly. And so I would also argue that a year from now, at this time, when we go back and look at the data again, and we want to adjust this one because maybe we're seeing, like, okay, we're seeing the tier one really change, and so that referral rate has really been shifting. We want to change that percentage. Again, the idea about those percentages, that is something that can shift right there also. And then what's a reasonable...
And to your point, Darla, like, that's a great point. Like, all of a sudden, if there is a behavior that's a problem in a building, you become hyper-focused on it, and then what happens to your referrals about that behavior? They go up because everyone's addressing it. So I can see your point about cell phones. Like, there may not have been that many referrals last year about cell phones, but maybe the fact that kids don't have their cell phones and they're so bored they're doing math, now they're engaged and they're not slapping Billy. Like, that's what teachers are saying with the cell phone policy protocol.
Good.
So.
So then we go to, so that's why there's really only, when we whittled it down after the last conversation, that section only has the one error, that one bullet. This next one is staff support and retention.
So what happened to this section 2B? I see it's crossed out. I had it that goal was actually going to move up to the strategy and actions item.
Let me look and see.
Yeah, so it is the last, it's the last bullet in the strategies and actions.
Yep,
right.
The last two bullets right there?
CPI, CPI and trauma informed.
Oh, so you moved it up. Okay, I'm looking at, okay,
thank you. No problem.
Yep. Good catch right there. So the next area, increased support of new staff members. So Monroe Public Schools will achieve a 90% participation rate and an 85% satisfaction rate among first to third year teachers participating in the new teacher academy by the end of each school. So, you know, calling out the group sizes and focusing on those first 3 years of teachers here.
I think I've said this before,
yes.
And I'm just going to repeat it because at 90% is not 100%. If it's an effective intervention and Trojan Academy does what it's intended to do, then you would want 100% of participation in that, which, you know what I mean, not a 90%, that would mean 10% are not getting this valuable resource that the school offers in order to instruct the students to improve the other outcomes.
Can we talk about
medical leaves and...
That's not contractual at this point. So
it's not contractual.
They have, they want to go to their kid's soccer game or...
Could be working another job in the summer.
No.
Yeah,
there's those factors, right?
No,
it's like the factors like that you pointed out, all of the independent variables that go into a metric, like cell phones might increase referrals, like teachers' lives would impact the participation rate.
Since it's not contractual, do we discuss that at all as part of our bargaining? We can talk about that. That these are areas of that once we put your strategic plan goes together, then that becomes a priority area. So if you want that priority to be impacted, all right, then you
next
say, okay,
year.
Then you talk about, okay, we'd like to see something in the contract.
That's what I was
so that teachers are compensated to take part in our expectation of
participation
in the first 3 years.
So say there's 370 teachers, because we're only talking teachers here. And of those 370 teachers, 10% would be 37 teachers.
Oh, no, these are first three years.
So what would the number we're discussing be?
So...
There.
Say that again, maybe.
About how many, I know you answered this question before, because I remember actually.
We had 27-ish first year teachers, but when you include, when you include second and third, it's, I think, was it 40?
No, you're getting closer to that 80-ish number.
Yes, yeah.
For second, third year teachers.
Some of them have been, some of them aren't truly, I think it's around.
Yeah.
I just think about the classroom. So some of them might be new to our district.
It might be, Carrie might come back to be a school counselor, like, she's not.
I
love
that license
plan.
So,
so.
You did?
I love my license plan.
You like our license plan?
Yep. So, but that was addressing, trying to address our first year teachers, second year teachers, third year, and listen to them and training them up. Increased sense of belonging. So this one right here, we reworked this one. Hopefully we captured it. 90% of educators will report high levels of job satisfaction, indicating that they feel supported, valued, connected to the school community, and empowered by to make a meaningful difference in the student learning and success. So the idea was here is that if our employees are feeling like they job satisfaction there and empowered, then their that rating should be higher. And if they're not, then that, we're going to see that go down.
If being supported, valued, and connected, they can be objectively measured,
mm-hmm.
and they're not, that doesn't leave it totally subjective.
Yes.
Because it takes that emotion
yep.
out of it in
yep.
some aspects and allows for a, so I think that's well written in.
Thank you. Next one was increased capacity. Retainment. I thought we were changing this word here. Sorry.
What would you love mentor
check-ins?
I think that's probably that's probably one of our strategies.
Okay.
Somewhere.
I just mentioned it.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good idea.
Yep. I don't mentorships are in here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the idea is strengthening, increase the ability and retainment of high quality, high effective staff members. 80% of new teachers will rate the impact of the district's mentorship program as highly effective. And then this one was we just want to reduce our annual staff turnover by 10% or less. So turnover overall. Yeah, so our overall staff turnover rate right now is extraordinary. From not just teachers, staff. Our public school staff turnover rate is. So, it's probably more. Currently,
wise.
Well, I.
Shouldn't reduce it by 10%.
Yeah.
It should be like reduced to 10% or less.
Yeah.
Right, because if you're reducing it by 10% or less,
then we've got
10% of the current. Well, wouldn't it be 10? But wouldn't it be 10% of the current numbers? So,
right.
If it's. If we had. Let's. I know we were claiming, and Cindy's not here. We were claiming like 24, but maybe like the trickle down. Let's say it was 30. 10% would be 3. So then we want 27. Like I think that's how this is written. But you work at U of M, so I'm not.
No. It's just my brain is embraining this right now.
I know. I hear what you're saying right here.
Yeah. Two things. First of all, we don't need the word capacity. Second of all, I don't think we need the first section. Think if you're wanting to retain highly effective staff members, then the only measure you need is that number. We're going to maintain less than 10% or less than 8%.
Oh,
less than, you know what I mean? I don't even think you need the
PCI,
top part
PCI.
Of that. I don't think you need that.
PCI.
Whatever
mm-hmm.
this is.
Yeah.
Yes.
That could be over as a strategy.
Yeah.
And then, move it over and then say how are we want to increase the retainment of highly effective staff members. They're identified as effective through their annual, what do you call those things, reviews?
Evaluations.
Mm-hmm. And then you're going to maintain the turnover at less than pick a number. I don't know where we're at, so I don't know what to pick it at. And then get rid of CI. That's my suggestion.
Is there a reason we don't know what it is, or we? No. I was actually the HR today. No, I know that our teacher was really down. I can't remember where we saw it. We had it in a board workshop here a few weeks ago. No, I had it beginning of the year announcement there. Cindy, we put it in board briefs. But I know in talking with Jill, and we're gonna get staffing here really soon. is probably when we look at all, you know, 1,000 people, right? You're talking probably around a 50-60% rate. When we look at our
say that again.
50 or 60%
We're talking about everything.
Every employee, if you look at our totality,
what's the standard? We're talking 10%. Like, well, if we say we
want
to say 10%,
that's the point. We want to reduce the standard. That's we got to establish that that baseline there. And
we can't say less than 30%.
Well, and we could do right there is that our staff turnover rate is less than 30%.
What's the standard across the industry? Maybe find out what that is.
It depends on the department, though. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's a lump sum. It's hard because the academy, the type of work, it affects it.
I understand that because I've seen custodian and maintenance.
Yeah, you're going to rotate that
right now. It falls in the same category.
I like what Tom, so we go back to our couple of goals back where we talked about suspension and expulsion of those grades right there, is that we just break it down by departments. Because right now, our custodial department, our turnover rate is so high that it's skewing those numbers in a few other departments. So, because really at the end of the day, we might have a smaller turnover rate that costs money every time someone leaves, but the big one that we want to retain is the teachers not have that turnover rate be high.
Well,
so we break it down
by groups.
That's what we just said.
Yeah.
So that's what we'll get that one broke down by groups.
I've already C1 will be removed, but Darla, what do you think of 3C? Enhance the development and retention of highly effective staff members. It's on the board. I just got rid of capacity per your request.
It's in the yellow.
Okay. Tag. That was easy. Good. First try.
Are they measurable? Can they turn into goals? Yes.
So priority 4, like I said, we've recrafted some stuff down here. And in this area, this is family community partnership, so strengthening what we do between the schools and our community, the families. The first goal area is annually. 80% of families and community members will rate Monroe Public Schools as a valued, trusted, and collaborative partner.
So what is that goal?
Support
is the present baseline for that. Do we have any idea?
We don't even have
a measurement. We have no way to measure this.
Okay, so we'll have to generate one there. We want.
I'm not answering this.
But we need. But if the parents, the community doesn't. If the community doesn't believe in us, then we've got to.
100% agree with you.
So,
but we also know the constraint of a survey. It depends on when you give it out. It depends on what it focuses on. It depends on who the people are. And that can't always be representative. So what are those other community things? Maybe involvement in through community, maybe involvement in, I don't know.
The other could be is that this is focused strictly on parents.
We could do that. I thought based on the conversation in that meeting, there was a look at the totality of the community, which is huge then. Like
that's something the county should probably
measure more than us.
Well, they won't touch it. But,
I know.
But here, if we focus solely on the parents, which is the ones that...
Are you going to survey twice a year? Are you going to come in and come out? Beginning and end?
That's what we've set up right here. What's the best match?
Because I've done this enough in marketing. Surveys to me are convenient. It's hard to get good surveys. Give out Starbucks gift cards and you want or answer you want to get.
Yeah.
Your $35 gift card. Do you fill out this survey?
Especially when
you're I thought they liked you all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Use your email to log in, but we don't know who you are.
Yeah.
I like doing really
usually or if you really like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't really capture much middle ground territory.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. So that's in surveys. But people know how to do You do have people who know how to survey better than others.
Yeah,
the survey.
And that is a tricky one. It's fact is that we have, through perception data, we understand what our parents think of us.
Yeah.
And we need to know that.
At some point, you have to start.
Yeah.
So when the kids send papers home, right, they have all kinds of papers that go home, could there be a document, a survey, however you want to call it, that would go home and return with the student? I think you're probably going to have a better option there, and that no one puts any identifiers on it and just submits it into school on the time.
Yeah. And that's where you, so.
Because they're used to taking that folder back and forth.
Well, there's different grade levels where that may work and different homes where that's going to work. I think we have to think about, it kind of goes back to what you were talking about, a couple other goal areas. What is, how are we going about gathering the data and so that it's attached and authentic? Okay. And so that's where, we'll have to really look at. Like, we were thrilled when, we had some survey that we did, Cantrick in Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
We had 900 responses, okay? So we had a great turnout.
We captured those email addresses. We can.
We're working on our
routing. They're going to have
a lot of addresses. A lot of the IP addresses will probably the same.
For our work with Danover, can we use them as a third party to do interviews with some of our strategic partnerships?
If we want to, Hanover will do other work for us as part of the contract, and so there's at least two projects a year, and so we just need to talk about what we're trying to achieve and how they go about getting it done.
Because what I was thinking is, one of the problems with collecting information from, I'm thinking more along lines of interviewing our identified partnerships, right, thinking about the community members that we engage with. We don't want to get biased information because you're the superintendent. They're not going to be like, you suck. So I think if we could use our resources of Hanover strategically as like a, as an independent party, right, and have them do the interviewing for us of our partners with like community mental health, the ISD, name, film, blank, whatever other partnerships we have, that could be a way to get that really important data from those partnerships and also get, like, really important feedback for what they actually think.
Yeah.
So I totally understand what you're saying because it's the relationship between the school and those organizations.
Yeah.
The difference is when I sit out there, and today was one of those days, I'm constantly defending Monroe Public School to a, they don't do this, they don't do, now wait a minute. You may say some things, but, you know,
right.
So I think that how that goes out.
Oh, yeah.
And the way, who we're sending it to.
Yeah.
Because if you have a strategic partnership, the partnership is always going to defend the other end of the partnership. They're never not going to.
Well, I think that when you're doing an interview instead of a survey, right, because a survey typically has a Likert scale.
Yep.
Of like strongly agree, neutral, disagree, strongly disagree, neutral.
That's where we sit middle ground.
Yeah. So, but when you're doing an interview, we would be able to work with Hanover to come up with specific interview questions for all people that are interviewed, and that those interviews would be strategically soliciting feedback about us as partners.
More come on that one.
That
one is.
What's
so we're gonna. Do we, I know we need Mary's item for sure.
Sure.
Then,
have to be better
for
them too.
Yeah.
We need to address that.
Yeah.
That
sounds good, but it's
behavioral based. Care Solace is completely behavioral based in 4C. Therefore, if you're looking at community resources, there has to be more than just a behavioral base.
So Care Solace is just a resource for people to use to get to support the community.
It's a strategy.
Just a strategy. That's all.
And the only reason I mentioned that is you put that strategy down. Therefore, I'm identifying that is only one avenue of support. There are tons of other supports, and maybe don't list them all in there.
No, in all fair stuff, they're not even a support. They're just a mechanism to get people to supports.
This is my thought.
Yeah, that's all they are. So all the goal with 4C was simply, though, that we help our parents understand and have access to the supports in the community. That's what we're trying to accomplish here.
And I understand that.
So,
I just had that conversation today. It's a big undertaking.
Yeah. Well,
it's key stuff.
Yep. As we see it here, and that's where, if you want me into a classroom, not classroom, sorry, into a building and talk to an administrator, that's always your short term. I don't know what you were saying. You heard last night. I pulled out and started calling that parent, right? It's the same kind of mentality that we have. We gotta have those resources to do a share. So, So we're going to keep working on this. Really close, everybody. So that next item I want to get there quickly is MASD resolution bylaws. Mary, you're up back.
Ready, set, go. So the resolutions and bylaws committee is going to be meeting for our committee meeting on October the 23rd, and then the delegate assembly where we will be voting is also on Thursday, October the 23rd at 7 p.m. MASB is going to provide a live stream link on their website so you can watch the delegate assembly. So you'll be able to watch all the, like, the voting and all of that in real time if that's what you would like. So that information is available for you just, like, through MASB. It'll just be published there, like, on their main page. And if for some reason I get access to that link earlier because the Resolutions and Bylaws Committee runs and organizes the delegate assembly, if I get access to that link sooner, I'll email it to all of you ahead of time. So the handbook for the delegate assembly is long, but we sent it out to all of you earlier, I guess because for time purposes. How would we like to proceed? Is there anything that we would like to talk about? Any amendments that you would like to discuss? Anything that you would like to propose? Anything that you have questions about? Because I know, Tom, you emailed me.
Yeah, the resolution, and again, I didn't listen to what was going on at the Department of Education today, but obviously their draft framework for health for the K through 12 is very controversial. And maybe the biggest issue is that, as far as I know, they solicited no input from principals or school boards. And I don't know about MASD if they provided any input. But I think at this point, I don't know where they're moving with that, but I would like to see a resolution from MASB that says, we don't support this at this time.
Okay.
We need input from all the particular people that have stakeholders before it gets to us.
So, great minds think alike. So, one of the proposed resolutions for this year was written by me. And it's basically saying that curricula and state standardized tests, we need more transparency on who is writing those,
mm-hmm.
and that we should be able to have access to that information, because I think that that is very important on knowing the sources of where the information is coming from. So it's in line with that. It's not the same, and I'm very happy to do this at the resolutions and bylaws, like at the delegate assembly. But I also want to pose, there's another avenue as well. The Resolutions and Bylaws Committee meets as a committee again in February, which I could take that resolution to our committee meeting and say, I would like this at the next delegate assembly. And then it would just be at the delegate assembly for vote, pending board approval. That's the board of directors approval.
But this vote will happen long before that.
Yes.
Is what the proposal. So is who's going, I listened to some of it today. So where are they going to seek input on this? You know, because the law was addressed, you know, where the Supreme Court ruling was addressed, you know, what authority does the Board of Education have as compared to, you know, local-based curriculum? So, you know, it's the idea that more people should have input, you know, into what's happening right now before they push the vote.
Yeah, and then once they come up with the draft, vetting by the different stakeholders so they can have input into how the vote should go.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the Department of Education.
Yeah, they're looking at an all or nothing now. They're going to put the whole thing in or they're going to put none based on what they said today. I don't think they're looking at changing it so much, and it's going to roll out the
some they're going to have to change it.
Some of the updates
as it goes through.
Some of the updates are good. I mean, they're throwing babies and stuff, which is good. But other parts are.
Yeah, there's things that haven't been updated since 2007, so that's why they just hit.
it goes back to, if we look at the document, what did they have on there? We didn't know who the committee was.
No.
They're, and, they're no. representatives. They quoted a person from Tecumseh, you know, in the news article. And so that was part of the work. So, you know, tell us who it was. That would help. And then what process it took on. And so that's what you're really asking for here. And
yeah.
so.
It's transparency into all
yeah.
of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't think they expected it to get out.
So. I guess they're trying to circumvent the legislature. Yeah. Who is their boss? There is a law on the books. This goes against what the law says.
Yeah.
And I mean, God, we're the school board. We just found out. I found out on Monday. Public comment was today.
Yeah.
I mean, wait a minute. You know, come on. Andy didn't know. You guys didn't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of other school systems were the same way.
The only thing I did talk with our local, Regine Foster, who's Monroe County, she works for Monroe County, Lenawee County, on everything for health. And then one thing she did say is in that document, if you see the letters SH, that section right there, that all, anything that's in that area has to be approved by a local board. Okay. And so a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, I know was found in those, in that area underneath SH. Okay. And so it won't go into any classroom unless it came from the local board first.
Well, it's still, it's, I think they still have to address the issue of the law. Because does the,
well, I'm just
do
saying
they
that,
have the
I'm
ability
if,
to push that
I'm,
down
I'm
to
just
the
saying
local
that
level?
If passes, yeah. if it passes MDE,
yeah.
that section, the only way it goes into Monroe Public Schools is through the CAB, through the Board of Education. That so if you wouldn't if you go back, you just look at those areas that says SH.
Yes.
That's
yes. we have final say.
You would have final say. So if I'm just telling you what the flip out is if they go forward, okay, then we will still have yeah. No, the flip out if they do that. If they flip out and go back and do this, so
yeah, that was an interesting phone call.
Yes.
Anything else?
No, but if you would like to have a resolution proposed on the floor of the delegate assembly, you're welcome to like write what you want that to be,
okay.
and I'm happy to take it and like present it at the meeting. So what would happen is obviously like opening of the meeting, you have all of like what it would look like. I would have it like checked by legal because they
yeah.
have lawyer people there, just making sure that like wording is what they need it to be, and then I would go up present it, it would be up on the big screen for everybody to be able to see it as well. And then it would be read to everybody. Everybody would have time to read it, digest it, and then they would open it up to the floor and allow everybody to go up and have 2 minutes to discuss pros, cons.
Mm-hmm. That would be fun. You should.
Mm-hmm.
When do you need this by?
I leave on Wednesday next week.
I leave tomorrow morning.
Now I'm writing it.
But,
no, you don't have to.
But the other thing
while you're writing it?
If you'd rather go the other avenue and have me take it to the Resolutions and Bylaws Committee meeting in February, I'm happy to do that as well. But it wouldn't be at the delegate assembly, though.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, by the way, even if they passed it, you as a school board association and you as local boards can push that message. And so the local board can still have a voice and say, we didn't appreciate the way this went out and all this stuff. And so you still get your message out. So that idea is that if you want that message, even if it's after the fact, it still isn't going to hurt because the process.
I think that's what led to this.
Right.
Is because the message went out that it wasn't being accepted, therefore.
I don't think the message was open yet.
Yeah. Usually not supposed to.
Maybe. Depending on what time we can get out of here tonight, maybe I'll have something too tonight.
And if you want to read the resolution that's up for vote that I wrote, it's G5.42. It's an amended resolution, and that's about the transparency of standardized testing and curricula.
Okay. Thank you.
So it is 6:40. I would ask that we. When we end the regular board meeting, that we just take a short break, come back, so I can go over the staffing, so we, I can make sure any kind of questions have been answered in regards to staffing, okay? Because Cindy's not with us, and so I've got my team ready to try and answer questions on staffing. But we have 10 minutes, and let's not try to hurry unless some of the space that we will bring.
Yes. Do we, Carrie, do we have any public commentary?
Do we have any public commentary?
No.
Very good. And that completes our agenda for the work session. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
I move that we adjourn.
We have the support. Show of hands. Very good. Monroe Public Schools Board of Education work session for Tuesday, October 14, 2025 is adjourned. The time is 6:50 p.m.